Hi, and welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. My name is Joseph G of monotonous.net and Orville.org. We are here to talk about Georgia politics.
Hi, I'm Buzz Brockway. I write for a blog called Peach Pundit and active in Republican politics, having been for a couple of years a party chairman in Gwinnett County, where I still live. And I'm glad to be here and appreciate the invitation.
I'm Randy Lewis. I'm one of the two editors of Georgia Daily Digest and GeorgiaPoliticalDigest.com. And looking forward to a little political talk.
This is Decatur Guy of Atlanta Public Affairs, and obviously I'm from Decatur, and I'm looking forward to informing you about what's been going on the last month or so.
I'm Joe Winter, and I have two blogs. One is joeventures.com, and the other one is bloglanta.com, where I don't write quite as often, but my friend Robert does.
All right, well, first I'd like to start out talking about the Cox-Taylor race, which I think is, from my perspective, one of the two most heated primaries going on right now in the state of Georgia. The race has been talked about a lot over the past year, but in the past 2 months or so, it seemed to become increasingly heated, and at one point it looked like Cox was the, you know, the quote-unquote leader, but I'm not sure that's true anymore, and I'm trying to get your guys' take on it.
Well, I was thinking to myself, number one, this was just not predicted at all. And second of all, I'm sure that Buzz over here from the Republicans of Gwinnett is just absolutely appalled at this whole deal.
It's horrible.
Yeah, that's my deadpan humor. But my overall impression, more seriously, of this race is that it was entirely predictable, and as to whether that would turn out to be good or bad for either Cox or Taylor in the end, whoever wins that primary, it's up in the air. We'll see.
This is actually one of the cases I would make against why we should not allow early voting. This campaign is going to be decided in the last 2 weeks, and everybody who cast a vote before then is probably going to regret that they've already cast their vote because they're going to want to vote for the other person. So there's a problem with early voting, and I think this kind of a campaign is a great demonstration of that. The other complaint that I have about the campaign is that here we have the two people who are claiming to be the standard bearer of, or at least trying to claim to be the standard bearer of the Democratic Party here in Georgia. They claim to be the party of the progressives, which is something I use derisively when I say the word. And if you look at everything that they're fighting about right now, they're arguing about issues like sales tax on groceries, which was an issue that was decided in the state 8 to 10 years ago. They're arguing about the Hope Scholarship, who supported it, and again, another issue that was decided 8 to 10 years ago. Everything that they're talking about, everything that they're debating are issues that clearly come out of Georgia's past. They have nothing to do with Georgia's future in terms of decisions that need to be made. And that's the real tragedy, and that is that they are two candidates who don't have a vision or a plan for the future, but they're beating each other with clubs that were constructed 10 years ago.
Do you think that's more a function of a primary? Because it seems primaries, folks spend most of their time trying to prove, I'm the stronger Democrat than you are. You're not really a Democrat. I really am. And maybe that only happens on the Republican side where those kind of accusations take place. But I'm wondering if, you know, the fact that neither one has really laid out a firm plan has more to do with the fact with this is still in the middle of the primary.
I think it
when
has
you're
a lot
just appealing to folks who are dyed-in-the-wool Democrats.
Could be, but it also has a lot to do with the Democratic Party being a party of dead ideas.
Well, it seems to me that both candidates in the Democratic primary, not running as who's the best Democrat, they're both trying to run as who's going to be the best Republican. And I think that's the problem here, and the problem with the Democratic Party is they don't have, you're absolutely right, the Democratic Party doesn't have any ideas. And the ideas they do have are ideas about issues 10 years ago. And so, you know, the Democrats, if they're ever going to come back in power into the state, they're going to have to find their ideas for the future of the state of Georgia. And I think there's potential there. Republicans, you know, do not have the most popular ideas if you take a poll on a lot of the issues that Republicans say they stand for. So, you know, Democrats need to take the ball and run with it on some ideas about what Georgia's going to be like for our children.
Absolutely. They should be right now trying to tell their base, the Democratic Party base, I'm the person that can beat Sonny Perdue, and here's how, and mapping it out with both a campaign plan and an issue plan and a plan that talks about the future of Georgia. And neither one of them are presenting anything that resembles a reason to vote against Sonny Perdue. And that's probably why Sonny Perdue is going to win with 60% of the
vote. What's really scary to me is that I don't recall hearing anyone talking about the future of Georgia.
Well, I think they have, and I mean, Kathy Cox talks about changing the educational system, and you know, a lot of that is just sort of a campaign plan for them. I really can't explain what it might be in a sense.
Feel good platitudes.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, so it's sort of there on the surface. But you know, back to the sort of the.
And when I say that, I mean any politician, yeah. any party. I don't hear much about the future.
I mean, you know, Governor Perdue got elected because he wanted to reinstate a 1956 flag. So, you know, you want to talk about candidates and talking about the future and that sort of thing. It doesn't necessarily mean you can't be elected or be a popular, successful governor.
I will actually give Sonny Perdue some points. He's obviously running a very smart campaign. 4 out of the 5 days a week, he's governor, not a candidate. And then 1 day a week, he's a candidate. So that's a very smart campaign for him to be running right now. And that 1 day of the week when he is being a candidate, he is talking about economic development. He's usually talking about, you know, bringing new businesses or something to that sort to the state. So I have to give him some credit to the extent that he is being something other than the governor, that is a candidate. He is generally talking about forward-looking issues.
In the meantime, Kathy Cox can't even get, you know, the voters to – they can't get cards to the voters saying that, you know, you need a photo ID. She's not being Secretary of State right now. And maybe if she was, she would be seen as probably a more effective leader. She could use some of her duties as Secretary of State to run for governor as a competent administrator. But she's not doing that. In the meantime, she's getting beat over the head by a much more – talented politician, and that's Mark Taylor.
Yeah, I think Mark Taylor is a guy who's been underestimated his whole career. And early on in this race, Republicans were scared to death of Kathy Cox. They looked at her as, you know, she could appeal to generally Republican suburban women voters, soccer moms and so forth, and she could bring those people over to the Democrat side. But I've always thought Mark Taylor was a very skilled politician I think he's proven that in this race so far, and I think Republicans better be careful. He shouldn't underestimate him.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that he is a very skilled politician, but at the same time, I'm not sure how well he's going to be able to differentiate himself from the governor right now, Sonny Perdue, because, you know, I haven't seen any big platform differences. I mean, who supports Hope more, you know, like that kind of thing.
Well, he may try to accuse that. That was something I think Roy Barnes tried to accuse Perdue of not voting against it years ago. But I mean, Hope is here, and that debate is over a long time ago. Like Randy was saying, continue to debate the past. But I think that's one thing that Kathy Cox is trying to do here recently is remind people that she's not the big guy, and points out that there are two other guys in the race, and she's the only woman. And you know, are women going to rally behind her and support her?
Well, where did the Cox campaign go wrong? Because she did start out very strong, and it's in the past 2 months that it just seems she's nosedived into.
I think what Buzz was sort of leading onto, strangely enough, is where she went wrong. Is her potential was that she might be able to bring into the fold suburban moderates and Republican women, and her stances, and I'm not saying it's the gay marriage issue in particular, maybe that issue alone is not enough to do it, but the position she sent by taking the position on the gay marriage amendment that she did, I think had an effect of actually driving away moderate Republicans and Republican women, because of all of the constituencies in the Republican Party who might go along with Kathy Cox if she took a more moderate position on the gay marriage amendment, those were the people. And so when given a choice, do I cross over and vote for Kathy Cox or vote for her in the general election, or do I go ahead and vote for the Republican incumbent when their positions are pretty much the same on the issue, what's the reason for voting for the Democrat?
So, Joseph, going back to the core of your question, and Buzz, I think you touched on this. I think really what we're seeing is that Mark Taylor has a bloodlust for politics. I mean, he loves this mm-hmm. stuff, and he knows how to close a campaign out. And he's attempting to close Kathy out, and at least as somebody who's not a partisan in on either side of the race, he appears to be doing a very 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 good job of it. The downside, though, for Mark is that type of politics is really the older generation politics of the Democratic Party. It's the old South, and physically, when you look at Mark, he just screams old South. I'm going to borrow a line from a popular TV show where one of the characters who was physically much like Mark said, you know, I'm just a roast beef sandwich away from a major coronary. And he looks like that. He's heavy and he's sweaty and he looks like the old South.
Strangely maybe, enough, though, he might be the candidate of the old South, but he might ride victory on his voting, the strength of African-American voters in the Democratic primary.
That's right, but it's still a Democratic coalition.
And maybe that Old South image would give him an advantage.
At least Democrats used to win back then.
Yeah.
Well, if he cuts into Purdue's rural support, which he was able to pry away from Barnes 4 years ago, that would seriously undercut Purdue's reelection chances.
Yeah. I mean, a campaign runs not just on issues, but also on image.
But I definitely think that you can look back at the turning point of this race was when the Supreme Court, not the Supreme Court, when the Fulton County Court issued the opinion on the marriage amendment, and Kathy Cox turned away her most ardent core supporters. She could have done a million other things than what she did. She did the absolute worst thing. And all of her most vital supporters are now running away from her, including myself, because of the stupidity of her decision in making the comments that she made. And it would be similar to Ralph Reed coming out and saying, you know, abortion's not too bad.
Yeah, she would have been better off not saying anything.
And she could have done that, and she decided not to. And I'm not sure why she did that before the primary anyway.
I can only guess that both of them have polling numbers that tell them that this decision is going to be made in South Georgia.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think she counted on losing her base of support in Metro Atlanta, which I think you're seeing in that calculation.
I think there was a way to do it that would have been a smart way to, right. to you know, wiggle around the issue however she was going to do it. And there's the way that she did it, which was send out a press release saying, yeah. I completely support this amendment, you know, when... You know, I know quite a few people who are gay people in DeKalb County who are extremely upset, who donated money to her and have asked for it back. So,
and we've gotten it, by the way.
But they're being lemmings in the really big picture. I mean, let's all be very honest here. In the big picture, are you going to do better if you're a gay person? Are you going to do better with Mark Taylor, or are you going to do better with Kathy Cox?
I don't know.
Well, you're saying that based on now the public stance. What really, I mean, closed doors, you know what needs to be done behind the door. Who's going to give you the better decision? Where are you going to go?
I think Kathy Cox, if elected governor, would be more of a target for Republicans who are going to remain in the majority in the legislature. I don't think any of us doubt that.
No.
Republicans are going to remain in the majority. I think Kathy Cox, as a Democratic governor, would be much more of a target for conservative, social conservative Republicans to pass the sort of bills to present her with the choice, do I veto this or do I piss off my supporters by not? And I don't think Mark Taylor is necessarily going to generate that sort of, because he doesn't have that stamp as a social liberal on his forehead. So maybe we would do worse by electing Kathy Cox.
It's possible.
Well, and the fact that she flip-flopped on it, you know, cast out on every stance she takes.
It's hard to trust her after
right.
that.
I don't know what she's going
to
do.
Come on, these are elected officials. You can't trust any of them.
It's hard to trust any of them.
But it's not just that. It's not just the marriage thing which she's flip-flopped on. She's flip-flopped on the Confederate flag. She's flip-flopped on whether she supported the lottery or not. It's pretty clear from the record that she supported keeping the state flag 10 years ago. She opposed a lottery 10 years ago, but now she says, oh no, I supported it then. And it may not, it's not really the issue of those issues. I can understand why, as a South Georgia Democrat in a rural conservative district, she took those positions. But, you know, to just lie and say, no, I really did support changing the Confederate flag, just throws into doubt her entire moral character, I think.
And it does cast a spotlight, again, on my bigger picture argument is, the Democratic Party right now is a vacuum of leadership.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone here disagrees with that, that at least from what I've heard.
So who are they vacuuming up?
they've got nobody. I mean, and here's the astonishing thing for the Democrats: one of these people will lose and be out of office. There's a good chance that both of them will lose because Sonny's running a textbook campaign and looking very strong. So if with both of these people out of the electoral picture, what has the Democratic Party got? I mean, let's go down to the second string. Let's and look around.
Sham ready,
but he's got to win.
He's certainly no cinch. Yeah.
He's no cinch, but you know, he is running a brilliant campaign.
Hearing him speak, I mean, he actually sounds like someone worth looking for.
He's probably the brightest hope of the Democratic Party, and they will find some way to screw that up.
Probably. what do you guys think about the possibility of Democratic voters going into the Republican campaign to vote against Reid? Because not just people who don't want to vote for Kathy, I've heard saying they want to do that, but just people who were so terrified of the thought of Ralph Reid being elected lieutenant governor.
I think it's up to the Republicans to determine for themselves whether they are a party of theocrats or party of something else, whatever. I don't even know Casey Cagle that well. but we all know Ralph Reed's image pretty well.
I don't think there's going to be enough that it's going to make a real difference. I mean, there's going to be over 600,000 people that vote in the Republican primary. Is there really going to be enough Democrats that's going to switch over? I just don't think it's going to make a difference if a significant number do.
Well, if Taylor Cox was the only race on the ballot of any significance, I think you might see more. But there's a lot of decisions to be made for Democrats. And even if they, I think you'll see more an effort to ignore that and skip over that race and vote for other races if you're really disgusted with those two candidates. But
I guess
I can't see large numbers crossing over.
It depends on how engaged the person is, too, because I think there are a lot of people who are casually interested in politics, and if they just hear the name Ralph Reed, and these are the people that some of the people that I've been talking to, that's what, you know, he's got it. Whatever kind of politician he's going to be, he's got an image as a political operative that scares people. So I do think that maybe there'd be some people who would do that, but I also think that those casual voters might be less likely to actually drive to the primaries.
And you're assuming that those people know that they have to pull a Republican ballot when they get there, and
yeah,
not just
true.
Vote in the Democratic, which they've done for 30 years.
Well, there was, in the McKinney race, going back now 4 years ago, there was a very unorganized campaign to get people to cross over, and even as loosely organized as it was, it worked. So it can be done effectively, and it can have an impact. But that was in a rather compact congressional district that's just mm-hmm. outside of an urban area. You know, is it something that you could pull off statewide?
And there was no other... First of all, I'm not sure that the Republican vote helped. I mean, it helped her, but I'm not sure she wouldn't have won anyway. But
I can tell you, everybody in my neighborhood voted against her, and they're all Republicans.
Yeah, but, you know, to do that on a... Even if that's true, to do that on a congressional district in a non-election year, not off-year election when there's no top ticket Republicans to vote for, and this year is...
I think the question is going to be, Cagle has not gone on the air with any TV commercials yet.
Has Reid?
No.
Cagle's had one. It was just a feel-good, hi, I'm Casey Cagle ad.
But the material that Cagle has to use in those ads is potentially devastating if it's done right. And we're going to find out what kind of a candidate Casey Cagle is. Does he know how to pull the knife? And does he know how to how to stick the shiv in, so to speak.
You would think the knife would be starting to emerge from the pocket because it's getting pretty close now.
It's getting pretty close, but he hasn't done it yet.
And absentee voters are voting right now. So
exactly. So I think that's going to be interesting. Do we see Casey Cagle develop into a candidate who knows how to, as they say in the industry, close the campaign out?
Well, I think part of what you're seeing is, I mean, the Journal Constitution, for a period of months, wrote articles about the Abramoff scandal almost daily. And that slacked off some, mostly because there wasn't any news. But now the report's been issued by McCain's committee.
Which people are still weeding through. I mean,
right, it's
found
huge.
Everything
it's almost 400 pages. But I don't know that there's anything new in there that hasn't already been reported on before. So, yeah, I don't know. Think that provides any new material for Cagle to use, but you know, I think Cagle has in Republican circles. There's been emails. It's been quiet, but they all come from him, and he's set up a number of websites directing people to examine very closely Ralph Reed's record on the Abramoff scandal and other things. So he's been out there. He's been hammering. A lot of it he didn't have to do because the Journal Constitution was doing it for him. But, you know, and I think that's made
well,
it, that's
and,
made
and
it a
Washington
race.
The Washington Post and the New York Times.
Sure.
I mean, everybody's
and that's made
in
it into
this.
A race, and that's put Cagle in the game. But
think,
he has to also come back and offer, yeah, Reed's got these problems. Here's what I'm going to do in place of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think television ads in this day and age are also a little overrated and very, very expensive. And I'm not sure what it gets you anymore other than, I mean, I think it's used selectively. It still is important. But to just run ads to be running ads and burning money, I'm not sure how important that is anymore.
No, there's so much media of all sorts, so many things to distract people's attention. You know, television alone won't do it.
I think the kind of, you know, celebrity endorsements that Ralph Reed has gotten have been a little bit odd too.
He's made some strange bedfellows. You know, Rudy Giuliani and Ralph Reed.
I particularly
together.
Liked it when Giuliani attended the Reed fundraiser, then proceeded to announce after the fundraiser that he supported civil unions and then thought that was the best approach to the whole gay marriage issue. At a Ralph Reed fundraiser.
Yeah, some of
it was a perfect. It was a perfect thing. You know, you mentioned Reed's perception. That's perfect for him, because it helps soften his image, or this allows him to say, "Look, I'm not the monster you thought I was. Here's my buddy Rudy Giuliani. We disagree on that issue, but we're still Republicans. We're still going to work together." So I think, you know, that's great for Reed.
How are the diehard Christian conservatives in Georgia gonna vote in this race?
It's tough to tell. I think every poll that's come out shows huge numbers of undecideds. And so the race is wide open.
Obviously, it's undecided within the Christian coalition as well,
yeah.
Considering the news from this week where Sadie Fields fired the Middle District Christian coalition leader for supporting Cagle.
Well, the fascinating things about Reed is, there. You know, you could certainly, if you're... if you're anything other than a fundamentalist Christian, you could come up with a whole list of reasons to be against him because of his past with the Christian Coalition and his fundamentalist notions about both his faith and also how that is applied in government. But now you have another whole set of issues that you get to examine this fellow by, and that is how he runs his business and what kind of a businessman he is. And how he's allowed those business principles to cross over with his fundamentalist principles. And I think personally that what's been painted as a very devastating picture of a very dark and cynical human soul. And that's something that should concern everyone. The way that he has used the lobbying business to cynically use fundamentalist people who are very sincere of heart about almost everything they do in their lives. These are not people to be made fun of or to be taken lightly or to be used or abused. These are a lot of people who have very sincere faiths. And what we have seen is this very dark human soul manipulate them while he made millions, $5 million, and then claiming he didn't know who gave him the money. There's something very dark there, and it should concern everybody, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or a fundamentalist or anything else. It paints a very scary picture.
Tell me how you really feel.
Well, I thought we might as well get that out on the table. Now, this doesn't mean I'm a Kegel supporter either, because frankly, in the races, in that particular race, both on the D and the R side, I've not made any decision. I don't know where I'm going. That's why I'm not an early voter.
Do you know what primary you're voting in?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I honestly have no idea.
Well, why don't we wrap this up, and I will start with Joe, and we can do some final thoughts.
Can you go the other way?
You're on the spot this time.
Pass.
There's some, you know, here in town Atlanta, there's quite a few legislative races in the Democratic primary that are looking to be interesting. I think that, I can't think of the numbers right now, but the one Alan Thornell's running in, I think everybody's looking for him to be in a runoff with one of the other three or four candidates in that race. I've heard through the rumor mill that Nan Orrick has taken a poll in her Senate race, and it's very, very close. She might lose that race. I think that her opponent is named Grace Davis. So those are just a couple. And also Carla Drenner's in serious trouble.
I'm going to pick two races that I really like. One is the Republican Agriculture Commissioner's race. Gary Black, I think, is somebody everybody should look to as a future state leader. I think he's a very impressive guy. He's running a great campaign in that race. It's a sleeper race right now. Not too many people paying attention to it, but I like it a lot. And I think we're going to see some possibilities for Georgia's future coming out of that particular race. The other one that I like a lot, of course, is Sham Reddy, just a super candidate running a great campaign on the Democratic side. It's a shame that he's a Democrat because he deserves a lot better than he's going to get from the party in terms of support. And I think it's a race everybody ought to keep a close watch on. He's certainly some talent that has some potential for the Democratic
Party. Can he beat Miss Angela?
He'll have to come
that
up with a rap.
That's pretty powerful. Well, I appreciate being invited here, and thanks for this opportunity. It's been a lot of fun. I love talking politics, and I think this, like most political years, is going to be very interesting and very entertaining on both the Democrat and the Republican side. I know the popular perception is that Georgia has changed from a Democrat state to a Republican state, and I'm not quite ready to say that's happened yet. I think we're going to have some very tough races up and down the ballot. There's some good candidates, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, and I'm looking forward to it. These next few weeks before the primaries are going to be very exciting.
Jeff, another chance?
Yeah. I think it's way past time by now. Georgia has been there's always been two Georgias as long as I've been around, and I've been around all my life, and it's time for the two Georgias to become one Georgia. We need to stop getting into the urban versus rural and realize how well we complement one another.
I just wanted to thank everyone out there for listening. I wanted to thank Rusty and Amber for giving us this space and letting us go on for this half hour. And hope that you listen again next time to the Georgia Politics Podcast. Thanks.